Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our topic today, disrobing the deception behind the enormous public relations and propaganda network supporting the big chemical agricultural industry such as Monsanto and DuPont. My guest, Gary Ruskin from the San Francisco Bay Area, and also we're going to be talking with Stacy Malkin. Stacy is the co-founder of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, which seeks to remove harmful chemicals from the beauty products and which followed her award-winning book, Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. She is currently the co-founder and director of U.S. Right to Know and was the media director of the California Right to Know. Earlier, Stacy was spearheaded the Communications for Healthcare Without Harm, which succeeded in having mercury removed from hospitals and closed down medical waste incinerators around the world. And she's appeared in The Human Experiment, produced by Sean Penn, and other films. And Experience Life magazine listed her as one of the five visionaries leading the charge to better health. Gary Ruskin is the co-founder and executive director of the U.S. Right to Know, which is a nonprofit organization with a mission to bring transparency and accountability to our nation's food and GMO industries and expose corporate failures that threaten the public's health. In 2012, he was the campaign manager for California's Right to Know, which was Proposition 37, and earlier directed the Congressional Accountability Project for 14 years, which opposed corruption in the U.S. Congress. For 9 years, Gary was executive director and co-founder of Commercial Alert, and also served as the director of the Center for Corporate Policy. He has often been quoted in major newspapers around the country and has appeared on scores of national programs. He received his undergraduate degree in religion from Carleton College and a master's degree in public policy from Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Right to Know's website is usrtk.org. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thanks for having us, Gary.
Recently, a PBS station in Denver aired a documentary film called Seeds of Death, which exposed the risk of GMOs and the corruption and fraud in the chemical agricultural industry. It highlighted Monsanto. And after the airing, the station started receiving letters and emails from individuals criticizing and complaining about the film, claiming it was imbalanced and misleading viewers, and provided a laundry list of alternative sources about GMOs, all very positive and supportive. In addition, the management put pressure on the station's producer, who wanted to play these programs and is fearless in selecting a controversial topic and running with it, in spite of the fact that many on the local station board would not allow this to happen. And she was called to a meeting and told, well, you've got some critical opposition to this film, in which case she sent us the letter, and our scholar in residence, myself, Richard Gale, we took our time and we simply took every single statement in the letter and we deconstructed it. And what we found, which was unique, was that in the deconstructing the pro-GMO correspondence that we provided, the investigation uncovered a powerful GMO lobby and propaganda machine that is hidden from the public, and it's well embedded in our national educational institutions, our mainstream media, our think tanks, and so-called scientific organizations. Also, the internet sources such as Wikipedia, which I do not trust at all. And then even behind this network, there is an even more powerful plutocratic network of wealthy financiers such as Bill Gates, the Koch brothers, the Vanguard Group, which is pretty much controls many of the larger banks to the tune of $3 trillion in investments, and elected officials such as Hillary Clinton and Kansas Congressman Mike Pompeo. Then there are minions of media outlets, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, Forbes, Fortune, who consistently pitch the pro-GMO agenda. Consequently, I felt it was time to do a longer special program to identify and expose this public relations machinery behind big agriculture and food firms. Because for over 100 years, there was not a single major lawsuit won by people saying that they had developed emphysema or cancer from smoking cigarettes. Now, the FDA and the U.S. Public Health Service knew that there were carcinogens in cigarettes, knew that it was addictive. The heads of all seven major tobacco firms knew the truth. They all lied before Congress. When under oath, they said, do you know of any addictive consequences of smoking? No. And as a result, the mainstream media downplayed the harmful risks of cigarette smoke. It was only when a whistleblower blew the whistle on them and showed that, yes, they did know, and they had scientists for hire, physicians for hire. They had an enormous machinery, a public relations machine that was protecting the entire industry. They had state legislators on their side, national legislators on their side. But once that broke open and we saw how much of a problem tobacco was, they ended up having to settle for an enormous amount, one of the largest settlements, if not the largest settlement, up to that point in history. And over a period of years, they would reimburse Medicaid at the state level for people who were using Medicaid because of the effects of tobacco. In any case, we then began to look deeper. We began to look behind the cancer industry, and I exposed the corruption behind the cancer industry and started that in 1975. And then the cosmetic industry, and then the meat industry, and then virtually everything that the government puts forth is supposedly in the public interest and not harmful, we found was not in the public interest, was harmful, but they got away with it because they controlled the message. They controlled the message so well that if you spoke up against them, you were attacked. And today, with the internet, you could have thousands of trolls, messages attacking you. They can discredit you. Now, here's what I want to say about Colorado Public Television. I commend the producer, Sherry Burnson, for having the courage first to air Seeds of Death, when it would not have aired on any other PBS station in the country. And because the local station boards are so power-packed with heavy-duty doctors representing medical organizations or big corporate interests. And as of today, she has aired it the most of any documentary in PBS history, over 60 times, that's 60 times. And it continues to be a leading element of educating people. So I want you to begin, please, by taking your time and give us a summary of the magnitude, the wealth, the political power and influence of this pro-GMO public relations machine. And then we can start to look at some of the major entities and individuals and the specific activities they are involved with. Stacy, let's begin with you, and then we'll go from you over to Gary, all right?
Well, thank you, Gary. I'm so glad to have the opportunity to talk about this topic because it really is, it's really about the future of our entire food system. And the comparison to the tobacco industry and getting away for so many years with confusing the science is a good one because the agrochemical industry is using a lot of the same tactics. And journalists and producers really do have to hold strong, and many of them can't even see the water that they're swimming in because the propaganda is just truly coming from all sides. And Gary and I started looking into this a few years ago, and we experienced it when we were working for the GMO Labeling Ballot Initiative in California in 2012, which was really the first time that the topic of genetically engineered foods came to the forefront in the United States. It really hadn't been covered much. Most people really had no idea that corporations have been genetically engineering food for about 20 years. So in 2012, this really came to the forefront in the form of a really grassroots women-led ballot initiative of people saying, you know, we want to know what's in our food. And the California Ballot Initiative was really significant in that it was many women, moms, people who had never been politically active before, you know, out there getting signatures, gathering almost a million signatures in just a short period of time. Just a real groundswell of demand for knowing what's in our food. And what we saw in response was just phenomenal, hugely funded companies willing to do and say anything to confuse voters, to confuse the issues. We saw many academics coming forward as supposedly independent experts using the same set of talking points that we were hearing from the largely Monsanto-funded campaign. They ended up spending $45 million on that campaign. It was literally about $1 million a day, we calculated, in false advertising and dirty tricks, all sorts of ways to confuse and mislead voters. And after that, we really were motivated to sort of get to the bottom of it. What's going on? You know, are these professors really independent, or what are the connections to the chemical companies and the PR firms? And so we eventually started U.S. Right to Know. We're just about 2 years old, a small organization, but we've really uncovered a tremendous amount of information that hasn't been known before. Gary Ruskin, who we'll hear from in a minute, has truly been brilliant in submitting Freedom of Information Act requests to get public information out of public institutions. And we have about tens of thousands of documents already that nobody has before that really offer a rare look behind the scenes at what's going on, at how the food and chemical companies, their front groups and PR operatives and academics are working together to promote industry propaganda. And we see, as you were mentioning, you know, just well-coordinated online attacks against scientists, journalists, advocates, and people raising concerns about GMOs, and a real concerted, well-coordinated PR effort to push chemical-intensive industrialized agriculture, of which GMOs are a key part. So we can talk more about the details of what we found, but that's really the big picture. And we've got lots more info to come. And you can read all the details of our investigation at our website, usrtk.org.
Okay, now we need the details. This is a program about details. Give us the details of what you've uncovered. Gary, we'll go to you.
Okay. Thanks so much for having us on the show. I really appreciate it. Let's dive into the details. The agrochemical and food industries have a broad range of front groups and PR firms that they use to deploy their messaging. They want all Americans and everybody across the world to think that GMOs are safe and that glyphosate and other pesticides are safe. And so they spend tens of millions of dollars a year on these PR firms and front groups. So let's just talk about some of them, who they are, what they do. Perhaps the most important one is a PR firm called Ketchum. It's owned by a larger firm called Omnicom. They're one of the most important bottom feeders of the PR universe. They were Russia's PR firm up until about a year ago. They currently are the PR firm for the corrupt regime of Honduras. Mother Jones, a few years back in 2008, did a great expose on how they have conducted espionage against nonprofit organizations like Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth related to their work related to genetically engineered food. Ketchum runs an important website and program called GMO Answers, which is the agrochemical industry's main salvo for trying to convince the U.S. public to eat genetically engineered food. It also runs another organization called the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance that we'll talk about in a little bit. They ironically are also, just like in America, they're also setting up a shop called Cultivate to promote natural and organic food, even as they try to savage it at GMO Answers. One of the things that we found, we could talk about GMO Answers for a long time, but one of the most interesting things we found was that they had professors, they have professors write answers about GMOs on this website, PR website, GMO Answers. But we found out that in some cases, the Ketchum actually wrote the answers for the professors who put their bylines on the ghostwritten answers. And so it's interesting. We know about ghostwriting in the pharmaceutical and tobacco industries, but we've now discovered it as well with the agrochemical industry. Another really interesting front group is run by a guy named Richard Berman. He runs essentially an empire of political influence. He runs a lobbying firm and some nonprofit organizations. He has advised, or maybe still advises, Monsanto. His nickname, widely known in Washington and elsewhere, is Dr. Evil. He runs something called the Center for Accountability in Science, and he runs something called the Center for Consumer Freedom, which was started as something called the Guest Choice Network with $600,000 in seed money from the tobacco company Philip Morris. They do a lot of promotion of GMOs and defending of the pesticide glyphosate, which, or herbicide glyphosate, which it goes along with so many of our genetically engineered food. There's another group is called the Genetic Literacy Project. They are run by the agrochemical industry's probably top outside PR messenger. His name is John Entine. Entine founded the PR firm ESG Media Metrics, whose clients included Monsanto. He partnered with a Monsanto-backed group called Academics Review to teach scientists and journalists how to defend GMOs and pesticides like glyphosate. The Genetic Literacy Project itself has a website that has excellent search engine optimization. And so if you type into the Google search window, things about GMOs or glyphosate, you're quite likely to get a lot of pages from the Genetic Literacy Project. Entine is a fascinating man. He wrote a book for the front group, the American Council on Science and Health, which published this book, Chemophobia, which defends atrazine, which is made by Syngenta. And Syngenta is a funder of the American Council on Science and Health. I guess while we're talking about them, might as well talk about them a little bit more, the American Council on Science and Health. They're a key front group for the food and agrochemical and tobacco industries. There was a great expose in Mother Jones maybe 4 years ago, which got a hold of ACSH's budget. The ACSH is, does time and time again, day after day, they do this defense of GMOs and pesticides. Found that ACSH planned to receive more than $300,000 of their money for 2012 to 2013 from Reynolds American and Philip Morris were supposed to give at least $100,000 each, which would have made them the two largest donors. But other key donors were companies like Chevron and Coca-Cola, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Dr. Pepper, Bayer Crop Science, Procter & Gamble, Syngenta, 3M, McDonald's, Altria, the tobacco conglomerate. ACSH is just another one of these companies that nonprofits that is out there to try to confuse you about what you know about good food and pesticides. I can keep doing a few more if that sounds yes. good.
Gary, is that what you want? This program is detailed oriented. So go ahead, please.
Okay, will do. So another one of these front groups that we have been working on quite a bit is something called the International Life Sciences Institute. It was founded by a Coca-Cola vice president named Alex Malaspina in 1978. The idea was to have like a deep lobbying organization for the food industry. In previous years, they were known as a vehicle for the tobacco industry to influence the United Nations and its agencies. But we obtained their 2012 major donor list, which shows $500,000 from Monsanto and $500,000 from CropLife International. And so now it seems like they're global, and their principal function is to do this deep lobbying on behalf of Coca-Cola and the agrochemical industry. Some things we found out this year were that we discovered the two heads of a joint Food and Agriculture Organization, World Health Organization, two agencies, key agencies of the United Nations, their panel that was evaluating the health risk of glyphosate. We found that their two heads, two guys named Alan Bubis and Angelo Moretto, were leaders of ILSI, the International Life Sciences Institute, which is heavily funded by the agrochemical industry. It's essentially, the foxes were guarding the hen houses, and they were able to get their industry people inside that panel to whitewash any possible questions about the dangers of glyphosate. This was a very important thing for the industry to do and for Monsanto to do, because a couple of months before that, the World Health Organization's cancer arm, IARC, had found that glyphosate was a probable carcinogen. And so Monsanto desperately wants to roll back that finding. Back here at home, though, we've also found a number of interesting activities of the International Life Sciences Institute. For example, we also discovered that Barbara Bowman, who was director of the CDC's Division for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention, was advising both Koch and ILSI about how to get the World Health Organization Director General Margaret Chan to back off a cracking down on sugar worldwide. Essentially, we found that this CDC staffer, Barbara Bowman, was a Coke mole inside of the CDC, working along with ILSI. The day after we published that information, Bowman quit the CDC. Also, we discovered that another Coke mole in the CDC who works with ILSI, top CDC staffer named Michael Pratt. He's a senior advisor for global health in the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion at CDC. He's authored papers for ILSI and for Koch, papers that were funded by ILSI and Koch. He sat on the board of directors of the ILSI Research Foundation. It is incredible that an incredible conflict of interest for someone who works for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is supposed to be to protect us against disease and chronic diseases, instead working with ILSI and with Coca-Cola, which, you know, is a major part of the global obesity epidemic. Let's see, other groups we could talk about. Since we're talking about Koch, let's talk about the Global Energy Balance Network. That was something that was established by Coca-Cola, started with a $1.5 million grant from Coca-Cola. The purpose of it was to shift blame for the global obesity epidemic away from Coke and onto lack of exercise. It was exposed last year in a great piece in the New York Times by a guy named Anahad O'Connor, who exposed it as a Koch front group. Then there are other ones that are smaller but still worth mentioning. One, say, like the Calorie Choice Council, which defends artificial sweeteners like aspartame and sucralose. They're run by a PR firm named Kellen. It's just amazing that you have PR firms running organizations for these industries. There's the International Food Information Council, which also aggressively promotes GMOs. They're essentially a sister organization to the International Life Sciences Institute. They do more PR work, though, so that's another one. Then other interesting ones are the Independent Women's Forum. They promote GMOs and writers who promote the backlash against organics and health food. I have received extensive funding from the Koch brothers. That's the KOCH brothers and KOCH Koch-related dark money foundations. So that's a quick wrap-up of some key front groups.
There's one entity that you mentioned earlier, the Genetic Literacy Project, that plays a formidable role in promulgating genetic engineering, which is funded and housed at the University of California, Davis. I'd like for you to discuss this, what you know about the university and the Genetic Literacy Project there, and if they are receiving money, how much that goes to university, and have you or others gone directly to the university and asked, how can you have an organization that receives outside money and then influences their decisions?
So these are great questions. So we have, during the last year and a half since we got started, we have filed 17 Freedom of Information Act requests regarding UC Davis. And UC Davis sent us almost nothing in response to those Freedom of Information Act requests. And so about a month ago, we sued UC Davis saying essentially, well, you know, you, under law, you have to send us the documents and you haven't done so. So they are starting to send us a few documents right now, but really we haven't received very much to be able to answer any of those questions. I mean, what we do know is that John Entine, who is the executive director of the Genetic Literacy Project, which is, you know, again, it's the agrochemical industry's most important outside PR group. John Entine has claimed for a while to be a senior fellow at UC Davis. We've asked UC Davis to explain the financing behind that and to explain how it is that Entine got this post at UC Davis, but they have not yet provided us with any answers, so stay tuned.
Okay. I want to go back over for a moment to continue this discussion. And if you've just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. We have Stacy Malkin and Gary Ruskin on. And we're talking about disrobing the deception behind the enormous public relations and propaganda network supporting big agriculture. So let's go back to you on this, Stacy. I want to have you look at a study that is quoted frequently by the pro-GMO contingent, and that is the Nicolia Review, which purports to have collected over 1,700 published studies showing that GMOs are safe and pose no environmental risk. Many of the deconstructed and debunked studies that challenge them are never seen. The Nicolia study as being corporate-friendly, cherry-pick science. It puts certain studies in, leaves other studies out. We've seen this repeatedly with statin drugs, with chemotherapy agents, with vaccines, with antipsychotic and antidepressive medications. So if they did hypothetically, if they did 100 studies on a single drug and 99 were shown to have no value and be destructive, but one had some small statistically significant impact, you would only know about that one. You would not know about all the failures and all the side effects and all the problems. That's how much proprietary science controls the whole machine. And yet, it is still considered to be the flagship study most often quoted for advancing GMOs. What can you share with us today about this study, which is actually promulgated extensively over the Genetic Literacy Project's website?
Right. Well, at first it was 1,700 studies, and then they got it down to a few hundred studies that were on a website that was created by a grad student used to say that GMOs are safe. But if you look at those actual studies on these lists, many of them have nothing whatsoever to do with GMO safety or environmental benefits. They're about performance characteristics or other aspects of genetic engineering. What we just see and hear about is a full-scale corporate propaganda around GMO science, fully committed to putting forth this false talking point that there's a consensus of safety, which many, many scientists have spoken out about. I think the best a piece of work on the overview of science on genetic engineering was done by a group of about 300 scientists, academics, and MDs who wrote a statement called No Consensus of Science on GMO Safety. And they really go through the details of the problems with the limited amount of information, the corporate control of science, and how much is not known, and that studies have raised concerns about unintended effects, unintentional toxins and compounds that have been created by the genetic engineering process. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty, and we don't hear about that uncertainty because the industry is so committed to painting this picture of scientific consensus. You know, one of the groups that I've looked into really closely that I think can be considered a front group is the Cornell Alliance for Science, which is hosted at Cornell. It was started in 2014 with a $5.6 million grant from the Gates Foundation. And I took a long time last year looking into the information that this group is putting out. And it's essentially just a full-on propaganda campaign that is training journalists and students to cover GMOs according to industry talking points. They hire bloggers to attack activists and downplay the risk of pesticides in Hawaii. And they stand and really put the reputation of Cornell behind incredibly unscientific statements. Like, for example, says on their website, you're more likely to be hit by an asteroid than be harmed by genetically engineered foods, and that's not an exaggeration. I mean, that's an exact quote of a science organization at a prestigious Ivy League university that pretends to teach journalists and students how to talk about science. And when we looked into who's behind it, we see a lot of the same characters. Gary's talked a lot about John Entine. He now at UC Davis, but he originally came from, he tries to disassociate himself from this now, but he came from an organization called STAT at George Mason University, which is a university that gets huge amounts of funding from the Koch brothers and unknown sources to STAT. But John Entine and his fellow there named Trevor Butterworth, for many years, as I've worked on lots of different issues regarding the chemical industry, they would be there defending, you know, every toxic chemical that it gets in trouble due to mountains of science showing that it's toxic. For example, phthalates, bisphenol A. They've defended corn syrup, sugary sodas, et cetera. Well, now Trevor Butterworth has reinvented himself in a group called Sense About Science, and he's actually partnering with the Cornell Alliance for Science to teach students how to talk about GMOs. So, you know, I just find that incredible that you have a group at an Ivy League school that is intentionally saying that they're trying to restore in scientific integrity to public discourse about GMOs, and they've employed, you know, guys who Butterworth's been called a chemical industry public relations writer in the press and just well-known ties to industry that he lied about for years, and now there he is teaching students and scientists how to talk about GMOs to the media. So this is just coming from, you know, the most prestigious science institutes, universities, and lots of, as we said earlier, so-called independent academics that we've shown through the documents that we've obtained, many of them actually getting straight-up payments from Monsanto and intentionally hiding them.
John Entwine, you mentioned, as well as Gary mentioned, he was a former producer at NBC and ABC and an ardent apologist for toxic substances in commercial products. Is right. He the same person that doesn't believe pesticides injure bees and other pollinators? And what is more important for us to know about this man and his activities in the GMO PR machine than what you just mentioned? What else can you add to this?
Well, we can talk about John Entine for hours and hours or days and days. So let's do a few more things about him. So he has been arranging something called Biotechnology Literacy Project boot camps, which teach scientists and journalists essentially how to talk nice about GMOs and pesticides to the public and how to write articles about this. And so faculty for the first boot camp were people like Kevin Folta, who was the subject of a front page New York Times story last year about his ties to Monsanto, as well as University of Illinois professor Bruce Chassie, who also was in that same New York Times piece exposing their ties to Monsanto. And essentially what it tries to do is it tries to, prepare new spokespeople with the best, most tested PR talking points, propaganda talking points, so that they can fan out across the country. The purpose of them was very much tied to the four ballot initiatives, where for labeling of genetically engineered food. And so that's another one of John Entine's key projects, other than his website. Entine has also been very interesting in that he has done a bunch of work that has benefited Syngenta. For example, in a great 2012 New Yorker article, Rachel Aviv wrote about how Syngenta tried to discredit this heroic University of California, Berkeley professor named Tyrone Hayes, whose research showed that atrazine, the herbicide atrazine, is associated with lots of birth problems in frogs. Entine has also attacked Tyrone Hayes quite aggressively. The funding for Entine is quite fascinating. I mean, that we could talk for a long time too. He claims that he receives no corporate funding, but that there are many good reasons to believe that that is not true. He has also defended neonicotinoids. Entine has. He's defended phthalates. Defended fracking. He's defended bisphenol A. He defends nuclear power. He recently attacked Naomi Oreskes, who's a great professor at Harvard, for her work on climate change. Also attacked the dean of the Columbia Journalism School, Steve Call, related to his excellent journalism on ExxonMobil. Those are a few more things to know about John Entine.
I remember a while back when there was so much negative publicity against Monsanto and even criticism from some of GMO supporters that the company had isolated itself too much from the public, that there appeared a website project called GMO Answers. This was supposed to be one-stop source, unbiased and objective according to the mission, to query anything about GMOs. What can you tell us about GMO Answers?
Well, there's so much to know about GMO Answers. The most important thing to know is that it's run by the PR firm Ketchum, which we talked about a little bit before. So this is the same PR firm that represented Russia, and so we don't believe Russia's PR firm when they talk about Russia's horrendous human rights violations and other repugnant policies. So why should we believe them when they talk about GMOs and pesticides? So the purpose of GMO Answers was this. Stacy and I, we ran the campaign for Proposition 37 for labeling of genetically engineered food in the state of California. And we, Stacy was the person who did the media work for the campaign. And she got so much media coverage, positive media coverage for the idea of labeling genetically engineered food, that the agrochemical industry was very alarmed by it. And so they decided after the campaign was over, they decided that they needed to bolster their PR effort in order to, combat the upswell of concern from consumers and citizens, mostly mothers and grandmothers, really, parents who were concerned about what food they were eating and feeding their own kids. And so they put together this this PR thing called GMO Answers with Ketchum. And so to me, one of the things that's most fascinating about GMO Answers is just how One of the ways you can tell that the agrochemical industry is not to be trusted is who they use to deploy their messaging. And so if you are an honorable, trustworthy person or organization, Ketchum is the last person that you would ever have deploy your messaging, because they're so untrustworthy. That, you know, this is an organization that, was Russia's PR firm. They're Honduras's PR firm now, a horribly corrupt organization, corrupt country. They have conducted espionage against nonprofit organizations. And so you would never pick a group like this to do your PR work. But this is who the agrochemical industry, Monsanto, has to settle for. And so they have. And so what GMO Answers essentially tries to do is they try to get experts who appear to be independent in one way or another to allay consumer concerns about GMOs and about glyphosate and about BT toxin. And so they do this by trotting out all of these experts because they many of them are academic experts. There's a lot of polling that goes on behind this, which shows that people are most likely to trust academics as a source of scientific information about their food. And so they tried out all these academics who look like they're independent, but in fact we have uncovered that, you know, many of them are receiving money from the industry in one way or another, whether it's direct grants from Monsanto or laundered through their university foundations, or they're given grants. Or they're given money through the closely allied Gates Foundation, but one way or another, they're taken money, and so that's the game, and it's a crucial part of the way that the agrochemical industry, Monsanto, and the agrochemical industry prop up the consumer views on genetically engineered food and glyphosate and pesticides in the United States and across the world.
Stacy, only recently, while doing some research, did I learn about the Alliance for Science at Cornell University, which has been mentioned earlier. Now, here's an organization, or it may be perceived by some as a PR front, with a highly respectable name. But my question is needing some substantive answer. What exactly do they do to align with independent science? They received $5 million from Bill Gates Foundation. So who is the Alliance for Science? And explain what they've actually produced that would justify their association with Cornell University.
Okay, so they were founded in 2014 with a $5.6 million grant from Gates, and their specific charge was to depolarize the charge debate about GMOs, and which promises to restore the importance of scientific evidence in decision-making. So that's how they set out as presenting themselves, and they're really a communications campaign. I mean, it's an entire organization, part of Cornell, that calls itself a communication-based nonprofit represented by scientists, farmers, NGOs, journalists, and concerned citizens who are building a global movement to advocate for access to biotechnology. So that's their own words. They are a communications training program to mobilize troops around the world to advocate for GMOs, and to advocate specifically for access to GMOs in developing countries like Africa. And so if you look at, so they have a 12-week course for global leadership fellows, they have intensive communication courses all around this idea of teaching people how to advocate for GMOs. So they're very upfront in a way that they are a GMO propaganda campaign. And as I said, if you really look at the language that they use, I've read speeches that their speakers bureaus use, aligning themselves with characters that are not trustworthy spokespeople for science, et cetera. It's really just the height of irony that this organization is representing science without any integrity or accuracy in science or in the people who are their messengers. So I've written a couple of articles about this for The Ecologist, in which I, you know, go through some of the errors on their website. Like I mentioned, you know, you're more likely to be hit by an asteroid than be harmed by GMOs. They've had speakers come, actually a well-known climate science denier named Owen Paterson, who was an MP in the UK, was a featured speaker at the Cornell Alliance for Science, making the point that environmentalists are basically killing millions of children in Africa by raising concerns about GMO technologies. So, you know, kind of the same arguments that we had back in the days of DDT. You know, chemical industry longstanding arguments reinvented for GMOs under the auspices of Cornell. So, you know, they've, a few things recently, they were involved in a protest against Vandana Shiva. I mentioned they work with bloggers in Hawaii to really basically attack activists, journalists, and promote pesticides. Hawaii, as I've written about, is really a ground zero for GMO testing. There's test fields throughout the islands and lots of problems reported about pesticide exposures to children in schools near agricultural fields. And just growing health concerns about huge pesticide exposures in the agricultural fields of Hawaii, which are also the testing grounds for GMOs. Bill Gates himself has, you know, I wrote an article about this, on record, just with flatly inaccurate statements about GMOs, saying that they're very well studied, that Africa will starve unless we deploy them there. I mean, it's a whole system of, as you've talked about, promoting chemical-intensive industrialized agriculture as the future of our food. And GMOs are a key pillar for that. And the Cornell Alliance for Science is a key propaganda machine pushing GMOs as the only answer for feeding Africa.
Let's continue with one more on this, Stacy. Since U.S. Right to Know is one of the leading public advocacy groups trying to expose the non-transparent actions of the GMO industry, what kind of attacks from the industry have you had to encounter? And can you share in general anything about their tactics to discredit all of the anti-GMO activists?
Sure. We were early targets. I mean, as we were just even getting started, we were right on the radar with frequent articles, hit articles by front groups like the American Council on Science and Health and by John Entine, Gary Ruskin. And our org is a favorite topic of attack for them, which really only shows that the tactics that we're deploying are effective. We're all about transparency. Let's just get the information that the public has a right to know out to the public. So we're focused on documenting, writing about, exposing what we're finding about the links between the chemical industry, their PR firms, and the white coat academics that they deploy as their key messengers. We've been very effective at that, and that has made us targets. And you know, the targets go from a range of writing hit pieces about us in blogs, and actually we've seen like Facebook pages with Gary Ruskin compared to Hitler and Stalin. I mean, like crazy outrageous stuff like that. Constant attacks on Twitter, that's a pretty frequent tactic. You know, the 20 people that with new Twitter accounts and hardly any followers that will come out and attack people personally and repeatedly to try to get people to stay silent or try to shame people into being quiet. And you just sort of have to ignore all that stuff. It just comes with it. It's not just us. It's many, many other advocates, scientists, and journalists have experienced the same tactics if they dare to point out that there are conflicting scientific opinions on GMOs and problems, including huge saturation of agricultural lands with pesticides that are harming children and communities.
Gary, years ago, it was Burson Marsteller that was the primary PR firm for Monsanto and other big agricultural giants. When Bill Clinton first ran for president, many of his campaign team were Burson executives and PR wonks. His first chief of staff was also from the company, and Hillary has continued to surround herself with persons tied to Burson Marsteller and Monsanto. But now I understand that it is the Ketchum Group, PR firm, that is the leading PR firm behind the GM industry, which you mentioned earlier. And you've gone into Ketchum's connections. Is there anything else about their past that we should be concerned about?
I'm sorry, about Ketchum's past? Or
yes.
Well, I mean, we've talked a bunch about it. I mean, they're one of the most sophisticated PR organizations in the world. And so, for example, when Vladimir Putin wanted to place an op-ed in the New York Times, Ketchum was the one that placed it for them. So they're able to operate, to do the dirty work for some of the most unsavory people on our planet with great effectiveness and efficiency. Right now they're the PR firm for the corrupt government of Honduras, which has terrible human rights and corruption issues. They run GMO Answers. They run the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. This is a very highly controversial and savory public relations organization.
Gary, give us a little background on the Center for Food Integrity, the International Life Science Institute, and the International Food Information Council.
Okay, so we did some on the International Life Sciences Institute. Let's see, the Center for Food Integrity is another prominent food industry PR group. They're funded, I think, by something like $25,000 per corporate member contributions, and they get plenty of news coverage throughout the media defending GMOs and pesticides and sugar processed food. They're very important. There's the Calorie Choice Council, which is a PR firm run by a PR firm named Kellum, and they are the sort of like the front group trade group for the artificial sweeteners industry, which has so many problems, and rightly so, because of the manifold health problems related to aspartame, especially, but also to sucralose. There's the International Food Information Council. That's kind of a sister organization to the International Life Sciences Institute. The idea of that one is to do public relations work. ILSI, the International Life Sciences Institute, they kind of do the deep lobbying, the deep scientific lobbying in the U.S. and in World Health, in United Nations agencies and across the world. But IFIC is much more, takes ILSI's research results and publicizes them. And we have emails that describe from the founder of ILSI and IFIC, man named Alex Malaspina, who was vice president of Coca-Cola, and he talks about how the two are designed to work together to deploy the messaging of the food industry very effectively, and they are very effective. Did I answer your question?
Yes. Stacy, with the increase in science showing the health risks of both chemical pesticides and GMO consumption, how do the big ag companies manage to conceal the health risks associated with their products? And do you have any new information to share about how Big Agra, and particularly Monsanto, has managed to influence the FDA and as a result has avoided responsible scientific scrutiny and honest review of GMOs?
Well, there's a big fight going on right now where all this is playing out around glyphosate, the most widely used agricultural chemical in the world, and one that's increased greatly because of GMOs. Because one thing that's important on the GMO topic is that the great majority of genetically engineered foods right now on the market, corn, soy, are the primary ones, have been genetically engineered to resist glyphosate, Monsanto's chemical. And weeds have become resistant, and farmers have had to use more and more and more glyphosate. Monsanto said for years it's absolutely benign. It's good for the environment. They were caught with false advertising. Concerns have grown in the science, and recently the International Agency for Research on Cancer of the World Health Organization came out and said that glyphosate is a probable human carcinogen. So that has really upended a lot of the Monsanto's claims, raised lots of concerns. Farmers are suing them over links to cancer, and world governments are saying, what are we going to do about glyphosate? So there's a big fight going on around that, and our colleague Carrie Gillum is really tracking this very closely, showing, you know, what FDA is saying. They just came out with a report that said they're not concerned about glyphosate. Of course, we know there's tremendous industry pressure on government agencies to promote and absolve their products. So I think this is a really important fight to watch.
I agree. And as I mentioned, well, Stacey, we're out of time. So Stacey Malkin, as well as Gary Rushkin, both from the U.S. Right to Know, and the website is usrtk.org. Thank you for all your good work, and we continue to support the truth coming from your organization. I'm Gary Knoll.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you all for listening. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour.